It's the Chris Kobach Show on KCMO. Talk Radio 103.7 FM and AM 710. 2 hours of thought, opinion, and commentary from the Kansas Secretary of State. Call Chris now at 576-7710.
Good evening, Kansas City, and welcome to the Chris Kobach Show here on KCMO Talk Radio 710, also available on FM at 103.7. This evening, we've got a very special show for you, a great show, I think you'll find, because of our guest, a person who's been on the Chris Kobach Show before. He's also testified before Congress many times. He is the person I regard as the number one immigration data guy in the whole country. I mean, he knows the numbers of immigration, both legal and illegal, better than anyone else in the country, in my humble opinion. And that's Stephen Camerota of the Center for Immigration Studies. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, hey, it's great to have you back, and thanks for taking your time to do this. I just really want to give our listeners some of the latest information on illegal immigration and legal immigration, and especially in light of the fact that we are closing in on the presidential general election of November, and Donald Trump continues to make it his flagship issue. So I just felt it would be a great opportunity to have you on the show and talk about what we know and the latest that we're hearing. So to that end, it's my understanding that just a couple of days ago, a really important study was or collection of numbers was released. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, sure. The National Academy of Sciences put out a new report dealing with sort of mainly focused on the economic and fiscal impact of immigration. That is, sort of what does it mean for jobs and wages, and what does it mean for taxpayers?
And so the National Academy of Sciences, have they done anything like this before?
Yeah, the last time they did it was about 19 years ago, and it was a very very well-regarded study then and had a big influence on the debate, and it continues to. And so this is, in a sense, updating much more sophisticated analysis in some areas, but with many of the same findings, interestingly enough.
So give us the 1 or 2 minute summary. What did they conclude? What are their findings?
Yeah, I mean, here's the story. There's a lot to it, right? The report goes on for hundreds and hundreds of pages, dozens and dozens of figures and tables. But if you had to summarize what the National Academy found was, they do reject the idea that immigrants only do jobs Americans don't want. Rather, they say immigrants do compete with natives for some jobs, and this reduces wages. And it's often the least educated and poorest natives, as well as earlier waves of immigrants and likely teenagers, who are the ones who are most likely to be in competition with immigrants. Now, this is also important point. Reduced wages generate benefits for businesses and perhaps consumers. And you can show that there's a net economic benefit from this redistribution, that is from workers mainly to employers. But the redistribution is very small relative to the size of the economy, but it is positive. However, the size of the redistribution is very large, which I'll go into. At the same time, because immigrants tend to, but by no means exclusively, tend to be poorer than natives on average, they also create a fiscal deficit. They don't pay enough in taxes to cover their consumption of public services. And right now, at least, that fiscal deficit is larger than is what that benefit called the immigrant surplus. So although businesses gain from the reduced wages, it looks like taxpayers lose so much from immigration that it offsets any economic gain. So there does not appear to be an economic or, when you put the fiscal and economic together, there does not seem to be a benefit. Another interesting finding, I guess I'd say at the end, is that the Academy also finds immigrants do not close the economic gap with natives, nor do they learn English as quickly as they did in prior generations. This is the slowing progress of immigrants kind of question. Now, I can put numbers on all these things if you'd like, but that's the overall finding. Basically, bad for workers,
tell me this, though.
Good for businesses, bad for taxpayers.
Now, tell me, when you say the immigrants, does this study look at illegal and legal lumped together, or does it separate them out?
Yeah, they're lumped together here.
Okay, so net fiscal impact of all immigrants is actually a negative one. So they don't make and when you said the benefit is not as great as the fiscal cost, you're talking about more than just the benefit in terms of taxes they might contribute. You're talking about the overall benefit to the economy, right?
Right. Now, remember, the economy is much larger because of immigrants. Immigrants mostly come to work. Most immigrants work, so they add their labor to the U.S. economy. The U.S. economy is $1.8 $1 trillion larger because of the roughly 17% of U.S. workers that are immigrants. Of that 17%, maybe a fourth or a third are illegal immigrants, the rest are legal immigrants. Remember, legal immigration is much larger than illegal immigration, even in Kansas. So the benefit we can get from having those immigrants in the labor market is that it reduces wages for native-born workers who are in competition with the immigrants, but this creates benefits for businesses and possibly consumers. There's not much research on how much gets passed through. However, putting that aside, if we turn to the fiscal impact, all the taxes immigrants pay minus all the services they use, we see some pretty big numbers that are negative there. They're so big that they entirely negate the economic benefit. Let me just give you an example. So they're looking at somewhere around $279 billion in one of the scenarios they run. Is $279 billion is the fiscal deficit immigrants create. Now, the best scenario they have, the immigrants create a fiscal deficit of $43 billion. But the net economic benefit is, or the immigrant surplus, as they call it, for businesses, is only around $50 billion. So in most of the scenarios, and even in the best scenario, it seems like it's just about enough to eat up all the economic benefit. And the other side of this
deficit, is that annual?
That is all annual, yeah. It's disconcerting is that to create a $50 billion benefit, you have to redistribute wages from workers to employers of somewhere around $500 billion a year. In other words, the wages of natives decline by $500 billion, but not all of that, well, all of that goes, you know, to the employer plus some. There's an immigrant surplus here. I could explain how you calculate it. It's a little bit complicated, but basically the immigrants cause employers to get a better return on their capital by lowering the wages of natives, and that's the surplus. That's the benefit. And these two things often get confused, the fiscal effect, all taxes paid and all services used, and the economic effect. And actually the other thing that gets confused is how much immigration makes the economy bigger. Sometimes people say, well, immigrants contribute over $1 trillion to the economy. The problem with that statement is it's technically true, but almost all of that goes to the immigrants. Over 98% of all the increased economic activity that immigrants create by coming goes to the immigrants themselves in the form of wages and benefits, as it should, since they're the ones doing the work. But people, that's not the measure of the benefit to the native-born population. So immigration makes the economy bigger, very slightly richer, but it looks like the fiscal drain is so big that it eats up the slightly richer. And of course, the native-born workers are better off, often those at the bottom of the labor market.
So the fiscal drain, now you're talking about a fiscal drain from both legal and illegal immigrants, and you and I have talked about this before, and there have been numerous studies talking about the fiscal drain caused by illegal aliens, because illegal aliens are disproportionately uneducated, low-skilled, and that kind of intuitively makes sense. They're low-skilled people coming into the American economy. We have this generous welfare state. Lots of states also have welfare programs that these illegal aliens qualify for. Unfortunately, they're not supposed to, but they do. And so, you know, with illegal aliens who are low-skilled, you kind of expect that the fiscal drain is going to be pretty great because they're low-skilled, they're consuming welfare programs, they're not generating a lot of income for themselves. I mean, they're, you know, enough to get by, but they're not really paying a lot in taxes. And in many cases, they might even be gaining an earned income tax credit. But this study includes legal immigrants as well. And many people think of legal immigrants as being super high skilled, you know, economically better than the average American. And it indicates that this might not be the case, right?
Right. Legal immigrants mostly come to the United States because they have a family member here. That's the primary, though not the exclusive, criteria for admissions to the United States. Almost 70% of new legal immigrants come in, again, to join a family member. And when that happens, there's no mechanism to make sure you get highly educated people. We actually run a lottery that doesn't, we give out 50,000 visas a year to people, and that
That's
also
outrageous.
Doesn't select skilled people. And finally, you have refugees and asylees who are allowed in on humanitarian grounds. And again, their education and skills is irrelevant. So most legal immigrants come in as a result, these are the permanent immigrants, the so-called green card. Those are the folks who can stay as long as they like and become citizens after 3 or 5 years. The vast majority of those people come in without regard to their education and skills. Now, we have all these temporary workers, and they actually show up in the data, too, but they're fewer in number, and many go home. That's the so-called, like, H-1B guest worker. But also, remember, a lot of the guest workers we let in are unskilled. They're farm workers, or they're for seasonal unskilled work outside of agriculture, or they're, you know, a person with 2 years of college who works at a resort for the summer and then goes home. These immigrants are not that skilled either. So overall, legal immigrants, while there are some very affluent, highly skilled, a significant fraction is, a very large fraction of legal immigrants residing in the United States at any one time have relatively little education, and those individuals are the most costly. The legal immigrant who's unskilled, and there are a lot of them. Maybe half or 40% of all legal immigrants have no education beyond high school. And so those individuals tend to use a lot in services because they have lower incomes reflecting their education, and they qualify, or their children qualify, for lots of services. So our legal immigration system likely accounts for more of the fiscal deficit than do the illegal immigrants. The other thing about immigrants is they have more kids on average, even the legal immigrants. Not dramatically more, but significantly more. And so that also creates a lot of educational costs, and there are unique costs associated with immigrants, so in educating immigrants and their children. So that is the other big cost associated with them. However, I would point out, when the Academy tries to control
education...
Hey, Mark,
let's take a quick break.
Okay.
We've got to end this segment real quick, and we will come right back. I know listeners are going to want to hear your next thought, so we'll take a quick break and come back in a few minutes. You're on the Chris Kobach Show on KCMO Talk Radio 710.
This is KCMO, Kansas City's most stimulating talk.
Hey, this is Mark Comfort, owner of Cruise Holidays and Comfort Tours, inviting you to join me and Dick and Renee of 94.9 Radio at the spectacular El Dorado Seaside Suites in the beautiful Riviera Maya area of Mexico. And this is in the heart of winter, February 5th through the 10th, nonstop flight. Adults only, ultra all-inclusive property. This brand new property you will absolutely love. Dick and Renee will be broadcasting live from this property again, February 5th through the 10th. Give us a call today to find out more at 816-505-1500 or online, cruiseholidayskc.com. That's cruiseholidayskc.com. And don't miss out. If you want to have a pre-Valentine's Day sweetheart get-together with your sweetheart, maybe renew your vows with the Reverend Dick Wilson and the Reverend Renee. Anyway, give us a call today at 816-505-1500. That's 505-1500.
Join the Walk to End Alzheimer's Sunday, October 2nd at Corporate Woods. Let's raise awareness and funds for care, support, and research to end Alzheimer's. The end of Alzheimer's starts with you. Register today at alzwalkkc.org. That's alzwalkkc.org.
Cimarron trailers are better by design through continuous product evaluation and innovation. Cimarron understands the importance of keeping your horses and livestock comfortable in transit. That's why they have developed their Comfort by Design system that is made up of ingenious features to promote a quiet stall area and comfortable temperature, like VHB attached side sheets and insulated roof material on every trailer. For your next Cimarron trailer, contact Transwest Trailers at www.transwest.com.
It's interesting, a new app has come out.
The KCMO Talk Radio app.
There's an app for that.
A free download on the iTunes or Google Play stores.
You know what's a great app?
KCMO Talk Radio on your smartphone, tablet, or mobile device. This is KCMO, Kansas City's most stimulating talk.
KCMO Talk Radio 710. If you're just joining us, we have a special guest, Steve Camerata from the Center for Immigration Studies, which can be found on the web at cis.org. I regard it as one of the best resources for finding detailed information about illegal immigration and legal immigration. And with us tonight is Steve Camerata, the number one numbers guy for the Center for Immigration Studies. And anyway, Steve, before the break, we were talking about the fiscal deficit caused by illegal aliens and this new National Academy of Sciences study that really points out how big it is, even for legal immigrants. And the number was as big as $279 billion a year in deficit. That is government expenditures minus any taxes that aliens provide while they're here in the United States. And you were about to elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, just very briefly. So one of the big reasons for the fiscal deficit, as you already mentioned, for illegals and then legals as well, is the large fraction with relatively little education in the modern American economy. People with relatively little education generally work at jobs, and most immigrants do work, it's important to note, don't pay that much in taxes reflecting their income, and their low income means they and their children often qualify for a host of public services. Important note is that work and welfare welfare, whether it's immigrants or natives, go together all the time. Most of the people receiving food stamps work. Even people who receive cash welfare programs often work. People who get these kids get school lunch or the WIC program or live in public housing or on Medicaid. These big welfare programs, most of those or a very large fraction in most states work. And that's true of the immigrants. So if you had to put it in a nutshell, there's a high cost to cheap labor. These people mostly come and work, but their low income reflecting their education means that they often qualify for lots of programs. If you control for the education level of the immigrants and their age, you still find a fiscal deficit, though it's much less. So in other words, the most skilled immigrants tend to be a little more costly than the most skilled natives, where their fiscal benefit isn't so big, and the least skilled immigrants tend to be somewhat more costly than the least skilled natives. So there is a problem that isn't just their education levels, but it's mostly stemming from education levels. But again, it must be emphasized, most immigrants come to work and most do work.
Okay, so another point I want to make is the you said that the National Academy of Sciences didn't distinguish between legal and illegal, but of course, you know, the immigrants who aren't supposed to be here, the aliens who aren't supposed to be here, are the illegal ones. And I know that the Federation for American Immigration Reform has a study that it's a couple years old now, and it was estimating that the illegal component of that deficit, you know, the illegal component of money we taxpayers pay because of illegal aliens here, is roughly $100 billion a year, taking into account federal and state expenditures. Now, you said that this latest study says $279 billion a year, perhaps at the high end. That would probably be about right, wouldn't it, if the illegal component was about $100 billion
of that 279? Well, I think the FAIR study, though, as I recall, though I may be correct, did not include their tax payments. So illegal immigrants, it may surprise your listeners, do pay taxes in various forms in various ways. And I think the FAIR figure is not net. That is, taxes paid minus services used. Here, we're talking about net figures. That $279 at the top end is a net figure.
Yeah, which is all the more striking, because even if you take into account the gas taxes, any income taxes, whatever taxes the aliens pay while they're here, sales taxes, it's still not enough to even come close to all the services they consume.
Right, right. I mean, the thing is, we think that about 55% of illegal immigrants actually are paid on the books. That is, they pay Social Security and Medicare taxes, and if they have income tax in some cases, they pay that too. But given the types of jobs they do, reflecting their overall educational attainment, they just don't pay that much. Again, if illegal immigrants have about a 10th grade education on average, people with a 10th grade education, native-born, legal immigrants, or illegal immigrants, don't make that much on average. Some would, but the vast majority don't. And so their tax payments and then use of public services reflect that. And a large fraction of legal immigrants don't have a lot of education. As I said at the outset, most legal immigrants are allowed into the United States because they have a family member here, and their education levels are not taken into account. So you can come with and be a high school dropout. That's not prohibited by the law or anything.
Okay, so another point you mentioned that the NAS study that was just released a couple days ago points out is that, again, contrary to popular misconception, these illegal aliens, and for that matter, legal aliens too, are not doing jobs Americans won't do. They're doing the same jobs. They're just depressing the wages in those jobs. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, one of the things to think about is that, yes, what the Academy says is that although immigrants can be distributed somewhat differently across occupations, the fact is there still are a lot of native-born people with the same general skill set of the immigrants. Now, the report has a long discussion of this question, but the report comes down on the side that the immigrants and the natives do, in many cases, compete for jobs. And because immigration increases the supply of workers, it reduces wages. There's no way around that. It's not their illegality, per se, but it's just simply their presence in the United States that tends to lower wages by increasing the supply of workers.
So let me get this straight, Steve. So these are jobs Americans will do, and they're doing them, and everybody's getting paid less because the illegal aliens are in the market working right alongside the U.S. citizens. Right?
Yes, no. Remember now, though, we're not just talking about illegal immigrants. The estimates, the fiscal, both the fiscal and the economic estimates in the National Academy report that was released recently include legal and illegal. And illegal immigrants are a much larger share of workers than are illegal immigrants. So immigrants are about 17% of workers. Maybe 6 percentage points of that, or one-third, are illegal. Two-thirds, maybe a little more, are legal. So it's mostly legal immigrants who increase the supply of workers and tend to drive down wages. And, of course, remember, that is not all necessarily bad. That can create very substantial benefits for employers, but workers would be worse off for the most part.
And taxpayers too. I mean, this study does a good job of pointing out who makes out well and who does poorly when you have a flood of immigration. And I'll refer to the illegal part, because the legal immigration is immigration that we've decided as a country is immigration that it will be allowed. But the illegal part is extra. You know, whatever the number may be, 11 million people here, of which some maybe 6 or 7 million are in the workforce. That's immigration we have decided as a country we are not interested in having having in the economy. And so it's driving down wages. So that means that all of the American workers in those industries are getting paid less. So they're paying a price. There are some American workers and some legal aliens who are not getting those jobs. So they're paying a much bigger direct price. They lost their job. And then the rest of us are also paying a price, because we're paying it through the taxes, the fiscal impact, right? So really the only person who makes out well in this situation is the alien who gets the job and the employer who gets to pay the person a cheaper wage, right?
Right. They would be the two winners, the immigrant themselves. Now, on the question – and the employer. Now, on the question of the legal immigrants, obviously illegal immigrants are people we allowed into the country. Many of them are naturalized citizens. They get to stay. That's the deal we offered them. But it does shed light on whether we should continue that policy in the future. If a large fraction of legal immigrants struggle and they create a fiscal deficit, we should at least be aware of that and maybe change our legal immigration system so that we don't have such a flow of unskilled people. Now, again, lots of legal immigrants are quite educated, but a very large fraction are not. And that raises the question, do you want to do anything about that? Because remember, you know, some people say, well, you know, my grandparents or great-grandparents or whatever came 100 years ago, 120 years ago, and they weren't well-educated. And, you know, I have a college degree now. All true, and that may be exactly the way to think about it. But remember, in 1910, federal, state, and local expenditures totaled just 5% of GDP. In other words, government was really, really small, and taxes were very tiny. That's completely changed today. Federal, state, and local government are at least 35% of the GDP of our economy, and taxes are not very small. It makes an enormous difference today if you bring in poor people in a way that it did not back in 1905 or 1910.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I want to pivot real quickly to something Donald Trump said when he laid out his immigration plan. And I was really surprised that he went to this subject, and that is the total number of legal immigrants, exactly what you're mentioning. You know, I think there's broad agreement, except maybe not among the far left fever swamps of the Democrat Party, but broad agreement that illegal immigration should not be allowed. But legal immigration is also, you know, the total number of people coming in legally and whether they're educated or not. That's a subject that some presidential candidates have, you know, not even touched. But Donald Trump touched it. And he said, look, we have to have the right number coming in. They have to be a number that is not so large that they refuse to assimilate or they are uninclined to assimilate. And it has to be a number that is in the national interest. And just for the benefit of listeners, I do have these numbers more or less memorized. Back in the 1980s, we were talking about maybe 250,000 to 300,000 green card holders every year, people getting green cards. Then in the 90s, it went up to about 500,000. And then during the first few years after the year 2000, after the turn of the century, we crossed the 1 million mark. And we've been bringing in 1 million green card holders every single year for, gosh, it's been more than 10 years now. So we really have quadrupled over the past 30 years the number of green card holders coming in. These are lawful permanent residents. And so there is a good question, what's the right number? If it's depressing wages for Americans, maybe the number's too high. Would that be a fair way to summarize what's going on?
Sure, absolutely. There are about 30 million legal immigrants in the United States. They may make up somewhere around 1 out of every 9 adults in the United States. So these are some big numbers. Over 1 million new people are allowed to come in each year. And the kind of comprehensive, quote, immigration reform that many in the Democratic Party and in the Republican Party have pushed would not just legalize illegal immigrants. The hope is to double the number of legal immigrants allowed in. Instead of 1 million a year, more like 2 million a year. That's what S-744, the big amnesty bill in the past, would do. Its really big effect is not the amnesty, but these dramatic increases in legal immigration. And I think we need to look hard at those numbers. It isn't just a matter, by the way, of the fiscal or economic impact. We have to think, how many people can we properly vet, and how many people can we properly assimilate and integrate into our societies? And unfortunately, there's nobody in Washington who steps back and even asks that question, let alone whatever answer. The answer seems to be whatever the special interests want. want, which is more people out in, that's what we do. So whether the business community wants it, whether ethnic advocacy groups want it, whether particular religious organizations want it, well, then that's what we'll do. We'll bring in more people. But our ability to absorb people, well, that's just not a consideration. The impact on our schools, not really a consideration. The impact on the healthcare system, well, not as consideration. Our physical infrastructure, well, that's not really something we're going to look at. Instead, we'll respond to pressure from various special interests.
Well, very well put. Okay, we're going to come back and talk about this, and I want to talk a little bit about assimilation in just a few minutes here on the Chris Kobach Show on KCMO Talk Radio 710.
I'm Dr. Siobhan Dolan of the March of Dimes. Fall means cooler temperatures, shorter days, and unfortunately, the start of flu season. That means it's time to get a flu shot. The flu can be a real pain. It can cause fever, chills, sore throat, body aches, headaches, and fatigue. But for some groups of people, such as pregnant women, the flu can be much more than an inconvenience. If you get the flu during pregnancy, you're more likely than other adults to have serious complications like pneumonia. Having the flu during pregnancy also increases your risk for preterm labor and premature birth. And fever from the flu can lead to birth defects.
CBS News Update. Young guys in a fast boat having fun, just flying along the beach in Miami, and hit a jetty. All three died, and one of them was 24-year-old Jose Fernandez, pitching ace of the Miami Marlins. Director of Operations, Mike Hill.
My heart goes out to his family.
I'm Peter King. Fernandez was born in Santa Clara, Cuba, and tried to defect to the U.S. three times before finally making it and settling in Tampa. He was an outstanding high school pitcher there, drafted by the Marlins. He spent parts of 2 years in the minor leagues, but his blazing fastball helped him jump all the way from Class A to the big leagues in 2013.
His heroic young story touched millions. His love of America, pure joy on the mound, will be missed. Team President David Sampson.
His story is representative of a story of hope and of love and of faith, and no one will ever let that story die.
CBS News Update, I'm Harley Carnes.
KCMO weather from KCTV 5.
Skies will clear out during the evening hours, and it's really going to get cool around here with temperatures falling into the mid-60s by 7 o'clock. Overnight, skies will be mostly clear, northwest winds at less than 9, and that low temperature drops down to a chilly 49 degrees. I'm KCTV 5 meteorologist Gary Amble.
I'm Dr. Siobhan Dolan of the March of Dimes. Fall means cooler temperatures, shorter days, and unfortunately, the start of flu season. That means it's time to get a flu shot. The flu can be a real pain. It can cause fever, chills, sore throat, body aches, headaches, and fatigue. But for some groups of people, such as pregnant women, the flu can be much more than an inconvenience. If you get the flu during pregnancy, you're more likely than other adults to have serious complications like pneumonia. Having the flu during pregnancy also increases your risk for preterm labor and premature birth. And fever from the flu can lead to birth defects and other problems in babies. Getting a flu shot during pregnancy doesn't just protect you. It also protects your baby from getting the flu during the first few months of life. All pregnant women should get a flu shot, preferably before flu season starts in October. The flu shot is safe to get during pregnancy. I'm Dr. Siobhan Dolan of the March of Dimes.
Trust us to get you to work in form.
People did not understand how big and how bad this disaster was going to be.
A Rio de Janeiro judge has issued a search and seizure warrant.
My opponent shared directly in the responsibility for the unrest in Milwaukee.
Wake up with Kansas City's most stimulating talk, KCMO.
The KCMO Talk Radio app on your smartphone, tablet, or mobile device.
60% of the time, it works every time.
A free download in the iTunes or Google Play stores. Kansas City's most stimulating talk. KCMO. Kansas City's most stimulating talk. KCMO. Kansas City's most stimulating talk.
I never dreamed that any mere physical experience could be so stimulating.
KCMO. KCMO.
Chris Kobach Show here on KCMO Talk Radio 710. With us tonight, special guest Steve Camerota for the Center for Immigration Studies. We have been talking the effects of legal and illegal immigration in the United States. Big study came out just this past week. Steve, we were talking before the break about how, you know, some of these amnesty plans that the Democrats have been pushing in particular would double the number of green card holders we take in this country every year from 1 million, which is way above what we were doing back in the 80s, to 2 million a year. And that doesn't even count all of the temporary
temporary workers that we'd be bringing in. You know, historically there was a pause where assimilation occurred, and this is really important information for people to know. So we think about the great immigration waves of like the, you know, the 1890s, the first decades of the 1900s, and then later ones as well as earlier ones in the 1840s. There was always a pause afterward where like for a couple of decades, maybe during the Civil War, during the First World War, there wasn't any seriously heavy immigration. And during that pause, assimilation occurred. There's a great book by Samuel Huntington that talks about this called Who Are We? And we haven't had a pause really in the current wave of illegal immigration and legal immigration since what? Since like the 1970s or 1960s? I mean, so how can assimilation occur if the wave just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and the aliens feel no particular pressure to, quote-unquote, become American?
Yeah, and the National Academy study actually mentions that with regard to language acquisition. There does seem to be a relationship to how big the immigrant community is in your area who speaks your language and how quickly people acquire English. So there does seem to be something to that. I mean, that seems like a perfectly reasonable point, and I think that we don't give much consideration to that. What is the level that we can absorb, and what does it mean? And we're not really talking very much about that. It is true that, and your listeners know, that actually the number of people who came in from really 1880 to 1920 was enormous. By the end of that period, it was, you know, World War I in 1914 significantly slowed it. But it was, in many years, 1 million people a year on a much smaller U.S. population base. But a lot of more people went home. That's an interesting point that we might want to discuss. Anyway, the foreign-born percentage got up over 14%, and then there was restrictive legislation in the 20s. So World War I and then restrictive legislation caused the level of immigration to fall dramatically in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and even through the 60s, so that by 1970, there were only less than 10 million immigrants in the U.S. Today it's 44 million, so it's more than quadrupled. So we had this fundamental change in policy, and it resulted in a big slowdown. And it almost certainly did do, as you suggested, play a big role in facilitating the assimilation and integration of immigrants. It's also the time that we were able to create a middle-class society. Remember, in 1910 or 1920, America very much was more of a society of haves and have-nots. It was only in the period of low immigration, where we weren't bringing in new workers, and other things went on, it's not just immigration, of course, that we created a middle-class society. And, of course, the descendants of those great wave immigrants moved up to some extent. So I think that a reasonable case can be made that if the past is to be our guide, then it would make sense to lower the numbers. And, of course, immigration is a discretionary policy of the federal government. Congress could pass a law, and we just take in fewer people if we think that makes sense. We're not obligated to take anybody.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the other thing that's changed since the period from 1922 to 1970 or whatever it is that we had that pause or that lower number of immigration is the public schools are no longer the crucible of assimilation. And that's an important point that Huntington made in his book is, you know, the public schools in the, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, they were pushing American values and really encouraging people to become American. Now our public schools are beset with multiculturalist impulses, and they're told, oh, you know, America has so much to apologize for. America is not a great place. We're not going to push any American values on you. We're going to celebrate your native culture, your home culture, I should say, from your home country. And we don't want you to abandon that culture. And so if the schools are not pushing people to assimilate anymore, and the numbers are just so overwhelming, so that you can come to the United States and live in a neighborhood where everybody speaks your native language, then there's not a whole lot of pressure to assimilate. And it sounds like the National Association of Sciences study, at least with language acquisition, English language acquisition, suggests that that's exactly what's happening.
Right. I think there is evidence of that. I mean, now, having said that, that doesn't mean that immigrants don't assimilate. It doesn't mean that no one learns English or anything like that. The pace has changed, and there are more immigrants who don't. And, of course, then there is the extremely troubling development of, you know, radicalization in immigrant communities. So immigrants are their children, and we've unfortunately seen some of that recently again. We have seen terrorism associated with immigrants or the children of immigrants as well, whether it's San Bernardino or Orlando or these recent stabbing in Minnesota or now these bombs in New York. Again, these were things done by immigrants or apparently the children of immigrants in some cases. So that would be a spectacular failure of assimilation. And I do think that one of the complex factors here is that there's been a breakdown in the consensus on what we want from immigrants. People say they want immigrants to assimilate, but immigrants get very mixed messages. As you point out, a lot of our professional educational establishment is overtly hostile to assimilation, that we can't agree on what we want from the immigrants. And that raises an important question. If you can't agree on what you want from the immigrants, is it a good idea to take in over 1 million new permanent legal immigrants every year? Maybe you should have a pause until you decide as a country what it is that you want.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, the other point is look, it's better for the immigrants themselves if we have a manageable number, because the immigrants themselves are being swamped with, you know, they're coming to the United States. They may or may not have marketable skills to help them in the labor market. And they all of a sudden are seeing more competition from legal and illegal labor coming in that they thought they wouldn't have to compete with. So everybody's better off if, and the American national interest is served, if we set that number, wherever it is, somewhere between 200,000 and 2 million, I guess, set that number where it benefits everybody, the American public, the American taxpayer, and the immigrants themselves, who need to be ideally coming into a situation where they can learn English, they can become American, they can assimilate, and they can have a job with a wage that isn't dropping through the floor. And you know, that's one of the things I want to talk with you about, Mark, briefly, is wage depression. So, you know, we've known that it exists. George Borjas at Harvard has done research on this subject for a long time. You know, and the Democrats, you know, they, when they talk about it, you know, they say, oh, yeah, our wages are going down. Isn't that horrible? We need to have a minimum wage of $15, et cetera, et cetera. But they don't go to the root cause of our wage stagnation in America and in many industries, wage decline. And it appears to be, a lot of it appears to be due to illegal immigration and in some cases legal immigration. And does the NAS study verify that?
Well, what they say is they go with a mainstream interpretation, which is that for about every 10 percentage point increase in the immigrant's share of an occupation or an educational group, it lowers wages in that group 3 to 4%. So if immigrants are 20% of, fill in the blank, I don't know, janitors, then that would imply that wages are 6 to 8% lower in that field. If they're 40%, then you would double those percentages. And there are a lot of occupations where immigrants are 20, 30, 40% of the workers, and so that implies a very big impact on wages there. So, yes, now it could be bigger. They do cite some research showing it's bigger, but they also cite research showing it's smaller, and they come down on the 3 to 4 percent. So, I think that for every 10%, so that's the elasticity, that's the impact of immigration on wages. So that's a fair question. If you have a situation with very little wage growth in the United States, if people at the bottom, everyone agrees, has not done well, that is, those who don't graduate high school, those who only have a high school degree, if everybody agrees that they are really struggling in the labor market, it is very hard to have an immigration policy. Half or more of the immigrants you allow in have a high school education or less. It's hard to see how that makes much sense, but that is what we do.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come right back, and I want to talk a little bit about this concept of immigrants leaving the United States and illegal aliens self-deporting, something that actually does happen. Folks, we are talking with Steve Camerota, one of the leading experts in America on immigration, and both legal and illegal. We'll be right back here on the Chris Kobach Show on KCMO Talk Radio 710.
I'm Dr. Siobhan Dolan of the March of Dimes. Fall means cooler temperatures, shorter days, and unfortunately, the start of flu season. That means it's time to get a flu shot. The flu can be a real pain. It can cause fever, chills, sore throat, body aches, headaches, and fatigue. But for some groups of people, such as pregnant women, the flu can be much more than an inconvenience. If you get the flu during pregnancy, you're more likely than other adults to have serious complications like pneumonia. Having the flu during pregnancy also increases your risk for preterm labor and premature birth. And fever from the flu can lead to birth defects and other problems in babies. Getting a flu shot during pregnancy doesn't just protect you. It also protects your baby from getting the flu during the first few months of life. All pregnant women should get a flu shot, preferably before flu season starts in October. The flu shot is safe to get during pregnancy. I'm Dr. Siobhan Dolan of the March of Dimes.
Trust us to get you to work informed.
People did not understand how big and how bad this disaster was going to be.
A Rio de Janeiro judge has issued a search and seizure warrant.
My opponent shared directly in the responsibility for the unrest in Milwaukee.
Wake up with Kansas City's most stimulating talk, KCMO. Kansas City's most stimulating talk.
Potential side effects may include nausea, flaking of the scalp, intestinal cramping, constipation, rectal itching, and dizziness.
KCMO Kansas City. K. C. M. O. We've got your news right here. KCMO, Kansas City.
Hey, guys, make sure to follow us on social media all weekend long. We'll be posting great stuff, local, national news and whatnot. Facebook and Twitter, both at KCMO Talk Radio. See you Monday.
Welcome back to the Chris Kobach Show here on KCMO Talk Radio 710. Again, if you're just joining us, we are talking with Stephen Camerata of the Center for Immigration Studies. His work is available at cis.org. He has authored many, many papers there, crunched many, many numbers. And if you want some facts as you talk about illegal immigration or legal immigration, you can find them at the cis.org website, and you can see a lot of Steve's work there. Steve, I wanted to come back to the subject of illegal aliens in the United States who actually leave. And one word that you've used in some of your discussions with me in the past is churn, that there is a churn in the alien population and that lots of people are leaving just as they are coming to the United States. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and maybe share some thoughts that our listeners may not already be aware of?
Yeah, so this always comes up in the question of, well, look, if more people are always coming, how can there be only 11 or 10 or 12 million illegal immigrants in the United States? But what the public forgets about is, yes, it's likely, almost certain, I think the number's bigger now, but at least during the last 10 years, 350,000 or more new illegal immigrants settled in the United States each year. That is, they overstayed a temporary visa or they snuck into the United States across the border or were smuggled in on a ship. That number is very large, right? So since Obama took the presidency, at least 3 million new illegal immigrants have settled in the United States. But that number is offset by all the people who go home on their own, which happens. We have lots of evidence of that. People who get deported, and that's not a trivial number. A modest number, but not zero, who die. About 50,000 illegal immigrants die each year. It's a human population. There's always natural mortality. And then finally, the people that we actually give legal status to. So they leave. Now, remember, the illegal population, unlike a regular human population, there are no births that add to it. So if an illegal immigrant has a child, we could debate why, if this makes any sense, but that child is a U.S. citizen at birth and so is not counted in the illegal totals. If you did count them in the legal totals, then it'd be more like 15 million people here illegally, more than 15 million. But the reason it's only around 11.5 to 12 million, in my view, is that we have this churn. People come, people go, and people legalize, and a small fraction die. And so that's how you can have so many people coming in without the population growing. Now, some of this is policy. The Obama administration has granted a lot of waivers so that illegal aliens can, quote, adjust their status from within the United States. All told, 100,000 to 200,000 people get legal status every year who are former illegal immigrants. 100,000 to 200,000 people go home on their own, and over 100,000 people get deported each year. And that's why the population doesn't grow, despite new people, hundreds of thousands of new people, sneaking across the border or overstaying a visa every year.
So let me hit a couple of numbers you just mentioned. So we're talking about maybe up to 200,000 people self-deporting, illegal aliens just leaving. And another 100,000 or so, actually it could be, in some years it's higher, maybe 100,000 to 200,000 of ICE deportations actually happening. You know, there are some deportation orders that go out and then the illegal alien just disappears if he's not in custody. So we're talking maybe 300,000 or more illegal aliens leaving the country, both self-deporting and being actually deported then, right?
Right, exactly. It's over. And if you put in deaths, it's 350,000 a year in most years. So that's why the illegal alien population doesn't grow so much.
And that's why I have made the point, and I'm not the only one, that it's a false dichotomy when people who are fans of amnesty say, oh, you've got only two choices. You've got to either grant an amnesty to everyone here or try to deport every single one of the 11 million. Well, no, you don't. You just have to change the calculus that the illegal alien makes in his head of whether to stay or not. If you've got hundreds of thousands leaving on their own, they're obviously leaving because they have some incentive to go home or some disincentive to stay. And so, as Trump has said, and as many others have said, just turn off the jobs magnet and turn off the benefits magnet. If the illegal alien no longer has a job and no longer is getting any government benefits of any significance, he's going to have a strong economic incentive to go among the self-deportation crowd. So we change the numbers. We reduce the numbers coming in because of the wall. We increase the numbers going out because we've taken away the jobs. It seems logical, doesn't it, Steve, that if they're making the voluntary decision to leave right now, we could increase the number who are making that voluntary decision.
Right. I mean, the idea would be to have the E-Verify program, require employers to verify the legal status of their workers and make sure that illegal immigrants, to the extent possible, don't get jobs and public benefits, get the cooperation of local law enforcement, don't let illegal aliens get driver's license and in-state college tuition, and all these incentives we create for them to stay. You could significantly increase the number going through enforcement mechanisms, reduce the number of coming, and you could take care of the problem, would take care of itself over time. It's not going to be solved overnight. It took more than 20 years of neglect to get to this point. You're not going to fix it overnight, but that's the way to do it. Yes, you should be deporting more people, and yes, you should follow up when an order of deportation is issued. But you don't have to round everyone up. You don't have to solve the problem a week from next Tuesday. You can begin this process by getting rid of the people in their jails and prisons, making sure illegal immigrants can't access things like jobs and welfare, and getting the cooperation of local law enforcement, and we can begin to bring these numbers down, I think, relatively quickly, certainly at first. Now, at some point, then you can decide whether you want to have an amnesty for those who remain. The only justification for an amnesty, it's a way to get a clean slate to start anew after you've actually gotten the situation under control. And that is essentially, I take it, what Trump is saying.
Yeah, he's saying we're going to triple the number of interior enforcement agents for ICE. We're going to aggressively enforce the law and dramatically increase the resources that we put to enforcement. And he said if you want to get legal presence, he said the only way you can do that is to go home and get in line. There will be no amnesty. And we build the wall. So we're going to do all these things that will encourage illegal aliens to leave and take away the jobs and the benefits. He said that as well. And deport a lot more. So we'll see. After 5 or 6 years of that, the illegal alien population should be quite a bit smaller, I would imagine. It only makes sense. I mean, if you can't work in the United States and work was what brought you here, then that's going to be a pretty big incentive to go home. And let's remember, deportation and self-deportation is just going home.
I mean, exactly. It's not like, I mean, the primary the top illegal alien sending country, somewhere around 58% of all illegal immigrants, is Mexico. Yes, Mexico is poorer than the United States, but it's also a place Americans vacation. It is not a land of unremitting suffering. If you can't make a life here, people will return. As you correctly point out, and we've been saying, lots of people do it on their own, as it is now. The other big difference would be if you had a president who said, look, we're not having an amnesty, and immigration enforcement is valued and important for economic reasons. It's valued for national security reasons. It's important to preserve our sovereignty and the rule of law. If we actually had a president who said those things, it could make an enormous difference, not just in the morale of the immigration bureaucracy charged with enforcement, but it would be a clear message to everyone that we actually do take our own law seriously. But right now, I think who want to come here illegally can pretty much dismiss that. They know we don't take our own law seriously.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The message of enforcement is just not there. And so you kind of can think from the individual alien's perspective, you know, as a person who deals in economics every day, Steve, you know this. So you're looking at costs and benefits. So the illegal alien today under Obama, he has no likelihood that ICE is going to come after him unless he's a serious, violent criminal. There's no cooperation between the feds, or very little cooperation between the feds and locals. So the notion that a local police arrest is going to result in you being deported is nil. You've got your job, you're making money in the United States, and you've probably got some benefits too. If you've got any kids, they're in the public schools, you've got other welfare benefits adding to your income, and you're able to send stuff home to your family back in the home country. If you change the calculation on every single one of those fronts, so the feds are aggressively coming after you, there's a chance you might spend some time behind bars if they catch you, the locals could turn any traffic ticket into a deportation, you just lost your job or you're not going to be able to, you know, keep that job because of E-Verify, and they're going to realize that you were illegally in the United States, and the benefits are drying up, seems to me that most people would rationally decide I'll be economically better off if I leave, right?
I think that's a perfectly reasonable argument. It's certainly the place to start. You can't restore the rule of law by rewarding everyone who's violated and then expect that, well, but from now on, no one will come. The fact is, the consistent application of the rule of law could have an enormous impact on the number coming and the number going. And I think that's the place to start. But to start with an amnesty makes absolutely no sense.
And one last question before we wrap it up. And I've talked to you about this back when the amnesty was in play in Congress, and thank goodness it's not right now. If we did grant an amnesty, in addition to all the fiscal costs we're talking about today, the $279 billion fiscal deficit of the more taxpayers have to pay versus anything the government's state and local government receives from these illegal aliens, if you grant an amnesty, that number becomes trillions of dollars over a 10-year period, right? I think the number was like $2.6 or $2.7 trillion for the last proposed amnesty. And why is that? Why does the fiscal cost
would likely grow. Boom. The reason it likely grows almost certainly is that illegal immigrants can be costly but because of their education levels. But the most costly type of immigrant is one who's legal but has very little education for the reasons we've discussed. He doesn't make much money. He tends to qualify for lots of services. And as a legal immigrant, he has access to a lot of stuff, especially after a few years. So if you legalized folks, illegal immigrants would become unskilled legal immigrants, the most costly type of immigrants. Again, most would still work, but their use of public services is extraordinarily high for legal immigrants who don't have a lot of education, and that's what the illegal immigrants would become. And so that's why amnesty is so costly. I mean, the bottom line, as I said at the outset, the estimates are that the average illegal immigrant only has a 10th grade education on average. So if that's right, which I'm pretty sure it is, then you can't fix that problem in the fiscal costs by legalization. You'd have to somehow significantly up their education levels. But the vast majority of illegal immigrants are over 25. Many of them have children. It's not that easy for someone born in another country who's 30 years old with two children to go back to school and complete a high school education and get a lot of training.
Yeah,
it happens, but it's not very easy, and it's not reasonable or fair. If we do legalize illegal immigrants, we have to understand it'll come with a large fiscal cost. I just wanted to add one more thing. The National Academy of Sciences does have an estimate for Kansas for legal and illegal immigrants, and if you multiply the numbers out that they present, it's about $393 million a year in fiscal deficit. That's the difference between what immigrants pay in Kansas and use in public services in the state.
$393 million a year in Kansas. That's amazing. Well, I really appreciate the information, Steve. You've been very kind with your time. And, folks, again, you've been listening to Steve Camerata here on the Chris Kobach Show, and you can read many of his studies at CIS.org. That's Center for Immigration Studies.org. Thanks so much, Steve, for being with us here on the Chris Kobach Show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Dr. Siobhan Dolan of the March of Dimes. Fall means cooler temperatures, shorter days, and, unfortunately, the start of flu season. That means it's time to get a flu shot. The flu can be a real pain. It can cause fever, chills, sore throat, body aches, headaches, and fatigue. But for some groups of people, such as pregnant women, the flu can be much more than an inconvenience. If you get the flu during pregnancy, you're more likely than other adults to have serious complications like pneumonia. Having the flu during pregnancy also increases your risk for preterm labor and premature birth. And fever from the flu can lead to birth defects and other problems in babies. Getting a flu shot during pregnancy doesn't just protect you. It also protects your baby from getting the flu during the first few months of life. All pregnant women should get a flu shot, preferably before flu season starts in October. The flu shot is safe to get during pregnancy. I'm Dr. Siobhan Dolan